Maintaining a website, especially a blog, can be a learning activity for personal benefit. Having a personal site is a great playground for learning tons of skills. Brian Wistie has been keeping his own blog on a VPS for many years. This episode discusses the journey and some of the learnings and benefits of his blog. We even talk about using PyTest to check content and checking for broken links and such. Welcome to Test and Code. If you've found value in this podcast, could you do me a favor? Could you go over to pythontest.com and look either in the top menu bar or in the bottom footer? And there's a few links we're going to talk about. Contact is how you can get a hold of me. Newsletter is how I can get a hold of you. And support is how you can find links to things like my book, the PyTest book, PyTest courses, the community where you can ask questions, and that's about it, really. I'd really appreciate if, especially if you could sign up for the newsletter. I'm trying to collect emails of people that might be interested in similar topics. Brian, what's a little background about who you are?
Yeah, just a general background. Been working web development, mostly server-side type programming, APIs, things like that, since about 99 or so was the first when I first started getting a paycheck for it. And, you know, the language, you know, at first it was usually Perl, but Python was an early hobby language, right around the same time as the first job. I was like, hey, this looks cool. And so even though I've only gotten paid for it in a couple of jobs, it's been a part of my toolkit. And so I'm often following folks in a Python context or, you know, listening to Python related podcasts, things like that. But more broadly, you know, I putter a lot constantly, you know, there's the passionate programmer type person. That's not me. I'm more the, crow in pursuit of another shiny trinket.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's pretty common. There's all these cool things out there. What new thing could I learn and play with?
Yeah.
And I want to remind people that before other people that might be horrified with the Perl comment, in the 90s, it was state of the art.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what, I still got a soft spot for Perl and for Raku, formerly known as Perl 6. And I've only seen it. I've heard it pronounced like five different ways. So Raku, but anyways, they're lovely languages, but they give you enough flexibility to hurt yourself bad and to hurt the next person bad. I understand why it's not as widespread, but if somebody offered me a pay, well, I'm very happy with my current job, but if suddenly that didn't happen and somebody offered me a paycheck to do Perl, I would be giving it serious thought. It's got some flexibility and expressiveness that I enjoy.
Yeah. It stuck around. The bit that stuck around with me was, and I did some Perl websites. I was in college in the 90s and doing some, and I even got paid for it a little bit. I did a calendar. Like
not just in smokes and pizza.
Yeah. Well, it was a kind of a job through the university. So I was a CS student and the business department offered me 10 hours a week to work on their, some of their web page stuff. And one of them was like this, the intent was a calendar application that you could try to like reserve a room or something. You could put, have a calendar assigned to a room and a conference room or something like that. And somebody could log in and say, I want this from this time, doing this thing. Right. So, and on the back end, they would submit the information on the back end. It was a Perl thing that would generate HTML pages and just write the HTML pages for the calendar. And those were generated. It was not pretty and I don't think it was ever used, but I did get paid a little tiny bit for it. So,
yeah, I mean, that's great. Like my very first, you know, my first W-2 involved job was in 99, but in 97, 98, I was webmaster dude for, a small neighborhood ISP. And I think he paid me about $200 cash a month, and I was the only one being paid with cash. The others were being paid in food and cigarettes and other things that probably should not be mentioned in a recorded platform. But
it's interesting that you've been stayed with it. My reaction when I was learning web stuff was interesting. I don't want to do it for a living, and left and went into the embedded world for most of my career. But still stuck around because I was always the impression of like, oh man, I can, if ever I wanted a website, I could just do it. And then I popped in and found out that like, PHP was a thing and, learned enough PHP to be dangerous. And then popped back a little bit later and, learned a little WordPress and then came back later and learned some Python stuff. And now for personal projects, I like static site generators, because
a lot of fun.
They're a lot of fun. Yeah. I forget the title we were going to call this.
It was the premise running your own website for fun and absolutely no profit whatsoever.
Yeah, I love that. Because it's a learning experience, right? So you do this, correct? You've got your own website?
Yeah. Yeah, randomgeekery.org.
Okay. Let me pull it up just so that I have it when I'm looking at it. So this is a fairly simple design, but nothing against that. But
no, that's my personal aesthetic. There are some, especially these days in the last few years since Jamstack has become a thing, people putting a lot of JavaScript-based functionality in otherwise static websites. They're doing some cool stuff.
So Jamstack, just to make sure that everybody's on page, what is that? It's JavaScript and what else?
Oh, I don't remember if there's an acronym for it, but just broadly, it just means exciting static web pages. they're generated with static HTML, which is like most SSGs. What you'll do is you'll start with some source files that are in a readily acceptable format, like Markdown or something like that, and processes them, turns them into regular web pages, organized somewhat with templates and your own logic. And that's pretty straightforward. That's what you'll see if you go to my site is the results of that. And Jamstack is basically the same thing, except there's so much that JavaScript can do these days and people are playing with that all the time. So you've got the HTML is static, but there's this whole React layer for something like Gatsby or a Vue layer or so on and so forth and so on.
Right. But on a lot of those things, you've got those are still can be static assets. And on the server, there's nothing going on other than serving stuff.
Right. But a really common theme on the Jamstack side of things is that they're integrating with a sort of cloud and service providers so they're using serverless functionality, which is, how you in the 21st century, how you say CGI. and it's just as simple, simple single purpose scripts that run on demand. So it really blurs the line on the static part of it.
Right. Like for instance, my site that I just converted this recently, went from a WordPress site to a Hugo based and Hugo is Go. I think,
But
I don't use Go at all. All I do is I just write Markdown and let Hugo do its magic and it generates the stuff.
Yeah.
So is your site a custom static generator or Hugo, or what are you using with this?
Today, that you will find this to be a unifying theme in any conversation with me. It's like, what is it today? Today I'm running, building the site with 11D, which is JavaScript based, but it's not the big Jamstack thing. It's more actually, it's using templates and Markdown in a context that is, more familiar to, like, if you know Hugo, then you'll know the basic idea of how to put things together in 11D.
Okay. Yeah. And one of the things I found interesting was, so Hugo has a templating language in it itself that I didn't think I had to care about. I thought, great, I can just write Markdown, except for things like, I want to link to other posts. So how do I do that? And things like that. So there's, I'm assuming 11D has similar sorts of stuff.
It does have similar stuff, but it doesn't have the same. It makes even fewer assumptions about content in that way than Hugo does. So where Hugo has custom short codes for, you know, embedding build time logic. So you can, the short code you were mentioning was a ref or rel ref, where you are pointing at a specific content file and Hugo turns that into a link. Over in 11D, you just put in the permalink. You just make a link to the permalink. But then, you can, of course, make your own shortcode. It's one of the nicer things with 11D is it's all JavaScript and it's non-framework JavaScript. So, you know, you can just get in there. I got into 11D because I wanted to learn more about Node.js and kind of general utility type JavaScript programming. And 11D has been really helpful for that because I didn't also have to learn React or also have to learn Vue.
Yeah.
I just was like, okay, how do I find a file? Go to the Node.js documentation and I'm good to go.
Okay. And on the server side, are you doing some of the server stuff also, or are you hosting it somewhere?
Right now I'm hosting on a VPS because I had a grand idea a couple of years ago that I would, you know, integrate some sort of microservice thing, which I have completely failed to write. So it's, it is effectively, you know, it is completely static. Partly because of the old school, partly because of accessibility, wanting to be able to get at my site from whatever, and also not wanting to ever have to care about updating it, you know, the WordPress problem. The structure of my site is as simple as I can manage it.
Okay. Well, so one of the things around, about having your own site. And so that it's interesting that you're doing the VPS hosting, because that seems like that's even a bar I don't even want to take on, but it would be a learning activity to set that up to be a server. I am using Netlify so that I can just say, hey, point it at my GitHub repo and say, go, you do it. But I don't learn much with that. I just, it's not really a learning thing. It's just, it works.
Well, there's the opportunities though. Netlify, like even just very recently, they announced some, you know, additional functionality that I'd kind of like to look at, because they're the, you know, free static host for the, you know, low traffic, non-interactive sites, but they also offer these assorted serverless functionality. And, you know, I mean, it's shiny. I want to play with it.
Yeah. I just upgraded to a slightly paid. So I'm not on a full paid account or anything, but I think I pay $9 a month so that I can see statistics. It's one of the things that I like. And I think that's a fair thing of, like, if you care about that, pay us a little money. I like that the WordPress thing was like the whole Google Analytics, but I didn't like that because Google's tracking everything. Whereas I do like the server side stats because I don't get any information about the people at all. I just get, like which pages were loaded. I mean, there is a little bit about which countries it's coming from. And I don't really care about that. I just want to know which posts are popular and not, things like that.
Yeah. My biggest questions on analytics are, like, you know, what pages are getting the most, you know, are getting the most visitors during this set of time, and where are they coming from? I also did the Google Analytics thing for a few years, and between, you know, the ending the honeymoon with Google and just realizing that the Google Analytics offers way more than I'll ever need. Like, I not even 10%, like 2% of what they offer, I wanted. So Yeah. I use Plausible for my analytics, and that seems to be keeping me pretty happy on all fronts, including the disillusionment part. They don't seem to be grabbing too much or any extra info.
Okay. So when I look at your site, it's got posts back to 2019.
That's the notes section. That was an experiment. Still doing it. The idea of notes are just the quick thoughts. And this is the thing about running your own site. You know, it's part of why I was, get so emphatic about it's a playground. One of my ideas is if you have a blog, there is a compulsion to not post unless it's good. This like happens with a lot of people that have, they want to, really think through a full on blog post. That was becoming a very big issue for me. So I was just like, I need something where I can just say, oh, it's the 21st of September. I want to just post the video, the Earth, Wind, and Fire video link. And that's it. So I had made a notes section that was dedicated to purpose. There's the two sections.
Your posts actually do go back to 2000. Nice.
Yeah. And some of that, is retrofitting. The site coolnamehere.com was the original face of the site, but then I got mad at my Yahoo email provider and canceled my email, and somebody else ended up getting to renew coolnamehere.com. So what had been more of a directory, still static, and at that point built by a kind of a hand bespoke Python script that I threw together, was replaced by randomgeekery.org, a full-on blog. I just, finally admitted it to myself. That's what it was. And around 2014 or 2015, I just started rounding up, the old site content and posts from other social platforms and stuff, just to get everything under one roof. It's retrofitted. It's it's a blog. And according to the Internet Archive, archive.org, this page started to exist in June of 2002. So we'll say that's when the post was made.
Okay. I just think it's cool that you've been actually just, even if it hasn't been super active, it's somewhat active throughout the years.
Yeah.
And that's nice to see something. Varies.
Yeah, there's a post on my site using SQLite utils to process some really lightweight processing of the publishing history on my site based on the dates that I have given it. So, there's a room for error before 2012. And it's fun, that plus data set, it's really, especially I've built up a long history. It's not a huge one guy who posts when he feels like it. It's not going to be a huge data set or anything, but it does give me some insight. I was really busy that year, that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. And also I like the idea of, just posting something that you want to remember, and having it a place for it. That's when I started blogging a long, long time ago. That was the original thing. I was the only person looking at it. I was surprised when I got a comment on it because I would do things like, way back in the day, I had some tricks with ClearCase, some weird command sequences that I wanted to remember. And people use Twitter now. I want to remember this, so I'm going to write it down and I can look it up later. Actually that's the problem with Twitter. You can't really look it up later. So writing for yourself is a great way to just start writing, and you don't have to care. I love the idea of I'm not doing this for somebody else. I'm doing it for me.
Yeah.
But it's not secret. It's out in the public. So people can look at it if they want. And sometimes I just have fun writing. So I want to write a whole bunch. And then other times something a little bit.
Exactly. Yeah. And it's kind of the same thing. And, I am the primary audience of my site. But I do share it publicly, because of the way my particular brain wiring responsibility thing if I have it out there, I won't lose. I'll make sure I don't lose it. As opposed to my many notebooks that I couldn't possibly tell you where they were. So that's one part. And then the other part is, you know, some of this could be useful to other people, you know, and it has been to my delight and surprise. It's not a busy site, but it gets steady traffic and people, you know, about 1,000 people a month, you know, it's good enough.
Nice. Yeah. It's not nothing.
It's not nothing. Exactly. And you know, it's been pretty stable during most of the time. And every once in a great while I get a tweet or an email, from somebody who's like, yeah, that post you wrote about drawing circular grids with Python, that was cool. That helped me in class. I'm like, awesome.
Yeah. I was like, that's great. So you brought up that you kind of did it. You do this partly to chase the shiny object or, you know, learn new technologies and stuff. Have you had any learnings from the experience that you didn't expect, like some unexpected benefits?
Well, yeah, a lot of the, you know, for one thing, a lot of it is like organizational, like I mentioned, you know, the fact of having it out there online somehow clicked a responsibility thing in my brain, you know, so to take care of it and to make sure that it doesn't get too broken. So that was an unexpected benefit because, I mean, it started out as just a playground. As you play with, you know, some additional stuff is just seeing common threads. It's sort of like, you know, when you learn one musical instrument, it gives you a foundation to learn more. And as you learn to play more, you get to see, you understand more of the common, you know, the commonalities. And it's the same thing with static site generators. They have a pretty stable flow. Like, you know, they do get fancier, but the basic idea is you have some source text that's not a website, and then you do some stuff, and then you have a website. And seeing how different languages, different teams and individuals work through that simple, you know, processing flow is really enlightening. You know, the things that are obvious in, say, Jekyll, which is written in Ruby, are basically impossible in Hugo, but the flexibility that, you know, that Hugo offers in its weird to me Go based templating syntax is so much more powerful than you would expect. And, you know, gives you a lot of toys that you don't have in, say, 11D, where the idea is to take advantage of the huge JavaScript ecosystem to build exactly the website you want. You know, yeah, so there's just all these different ways to basically say the same thing fascinates me.
Actually, it's interesting you bring that up because I never thought of a blog as a way to learn these sorts of skills. Going from trying to get all my content or trying to get the content off of the WordPress site. Mm-hmm. There's a way to do that. There's scripts that get in something that's almost good enough. Mm-hmm. And then going through and like making sure that that actually works and converting to a different site, even not WordPress to something else, but even a Markdown site, going from Hugo to Jekyll or to 11D or vice versa. You'll run into issues. It's not going to work just out of the box. Well, probably.
No, it never has. It is. And actually the worst is how often it's come through without complaint. And then like 6 months later, I load up the website and I'm looking at, you know, happen to glance at a 10-year-old page and I see like this syntax that just shouldn't have made it through to the live site. And I'm like, and incidentally, PyTest is fairly helpful for that kind of stuff.
Tell me more. Are you using PyTest for this?
I have used PyTest and I'm going to be re-implementing it. So the basic idea is I go through whatever process to build the site. So when I was doing this for an extended period of time, site was generated by Hugo and it was legacy issues even then, just because, you know, we're talking 15 to 20 year old content. And one of the biggest problems that any buddy on the web will ever have to deal with is dead links. We're used to point to something in 2004 and it doesn't anymore. So what I would do is just with PyTest and Beautiful Soup, the test was basically just to load up and parse all the HTML, find the links, split them out to local internal links within the site versus external links, because I wanted to always test my own links, but I didn't want to necessarily generate a whole bunch of bot traffic testing every link on a 20-year-old log. So using PyInvoke to drive it. So when I had an additional flag to test the external, it would include the external links in the tests. We've got the links loaded. We've got them split up, and then it parameterizes. So uses a PyTest mark parameterize so that you can clearly see which link from which file was bad. And yeah, so it's
that's so cool.
Yeah,
I've actually thought of doing that for the conversion that I did, and just said, I think this shouldn't be too hard, but I just don't want to do it right now.
It's tedious. Yeah. Coming up with it is tedious. And it's also hard because you know it's going to need more work as soon as you run it. Because it's like, yep, I found 350 broken links. Now I get to clean them all up.
Yeah. For the internal stuff and for links coming into the site, that's one of the reasons looked into paying for analytics on Netlify is because they also report all your 404s. So you can see the link, this link into your site, somebody tried and it didn't work.
Mm-hmm.
And it might be me that's linking to my own site and it didn't work.
Yeah. It's really helpful on that kind. And I've got over on my side, I've kind of got two solutions for that. One is I'm really conservative. Uploading rsync is why I use the rsync to synchronize to upload my changes. And although I have the urge to do a clean upload every time, like clear out the site and just, I've decided way back just to not do that. So there are links that are not technically part of there are pages that are not technically part of the site anymore, but they're still up. So they're not a 404. And if somebody clicks the home link, it'll take them back. And okay, yes, they could never get to that page again, except for however they got there in the first place. But you know, the content is there. You know, the spending the time on archive.org, you know, it has become important to me to not to be too disruptive to a person's expectations of reality. and then the second part is because I'm hosting on a VPS. It's Apache. So what I have been toying with recently is a script that pulls only the last 2 weeks worth of logs are held on the VPS I use. So like every week or so, it grabs the latest logs, parses the results, and uses Rich to give me the ones that have the most 404s, the Rich console formatting library.
Nice. And it gives you an opportunity to play with Rich.
Exactly.
Right. Yeah.
So, yeah. And that's, when I describe my site as a playground, I mean, I am not kidding in any kind of way. It's like all the crazy, stupid, random things that I absolutely know, not even to bother asking about at work. There's my website. You know,
right. So it's not just running the website or doing the which site generator you're using or something. It's also things like you're saying, if you do your own log collection and log cleaning, then, that's something that most people don't have to do, but you can learn some things or you can play with Rich or something.
Mm-hmm.
So that's nice.
Like a whole workflow and any random ideas that you think of. Like I briefly had an experiment where I was using my own site kind of for saving bookmarks. And it was just a little bit of Python and some, I think I just went with the request library to actually like, I would paste the link into the console and it would go and it would fetch the, uh, the open graph data from that page. And so you had a little cover image and things like that for the bookmark. And it was fun. You know, I've been stuck with it because it was also, you know, kind of, I've come up with other ways of doing bookmarks that I just don't really feel like putting on the website. So I haven't bought it. But I've left the bookmarks up.
Oh, that's nice. I've actually thought about like keeping, trying to jump, have some sort of personal bookmarking system or something to, because, I don't do that. And I end up like doing normal bookmarks in my browser, and then I can't share them between Firefox and Chrome, or you can, but it doesn't really work right. And then also there's stuff there from like decades ago that I don't use, and I don't know why I don't just delete it. I could just start fresh. I wish there was like a history thing of like, in the browser bookmark history of like, if I haven't clicked this in like a year, just get rid of it.
And I wouldn't be surprised if that's either a core feature of some niche browser or that there's an extension for it.
That's probably good.
But also, other than, so for me, for browser bookmarks, I have like, I keep my, I have the bookmarks toolbar open with like work links as one folder, other crap, and that's it. You know, I had a huge, like I still have, in my file archives, I still have my bookmark.html exported from Netscape Navigator. And I think 4 of the links are still good. You know, and it was hundreds of links, carefully nurtured.
On my work, laptop, I definitely, I've got one folder that's just BKO for my personal stuff. Because I've had the experience of having like a top level bookmark thing and doing a presentation and going to do a demo and, you know, having a link to like, you know, antique rabbits or something like that. What is that about? I don't want to talk about it during the presentation. I collect rabbits, but that's not relevant to this.
So. Anyway. My bookmarks toolbar is actually, it's like a half a dozen, and some of them have been added automatically, I can see. So we'll be doing some cleaning up as soon as we're done talking here. But yeah, they're kept as vanilla as possible. And it's because sharing screenshots, working remote. So, you know, your computer is my computer sometimes. So I want to make sure that there's not too off key, off color, that's readily visible.
Nice. One of the things looking around, it looks like talking to you, you're not planning on stopping this anytime soon. You're going to keep doing this for a while. Any advice for other people to, sort of assume everybody's got a blog, but a lot of people don't now. It didn't necessarily have to be a blog if you don't want to do it out in the open, but just having a long running useful thing for yourself. I was just thinking about that. I've tried small scale spot projects, just like GitHub, and put them up on repos, things that I just wanted to play it out. But if it's too much of a toy project, if it's a toy project so much that it's not even useful to me, I don't keep it up. But having, like, I've got a little project called Cards that I used for testing practices. But then I'm trying to use it myself, and I'm coming up with features that I'm like, I don't know how to do this, but I want to have this feature. And having some sort of dog fooding aspect to a side project helps it stay live, I think. So
it does. Anything that can kind of keep eyes on it, you know, keep your eyes on it, it's going to help keep project going. I mean, for me, it's the constant urge to putter, and having the website to focus it on, for others, it's like actually using the tool, that you're working on. It's a similar kind of concept. And, you know, like advice that I would have, for somebody vaguely curious, it's like, first off, you don't need to do any big, fight the urge to do big planning, to make it a big epic project. You know, if what you want is a blog, it's okay to have that blog on WordPress. You know, if all you want to do is just post the things that you're thinking about, you know, but then WordPress is great. Personally, on the PHP side, I prefer a different framework called Statamic. Statamic. Anyways, it's built with Laravel. It's really nice. It's kind of like, to my mind, it's like what WordPress would look like if they thought of it today. But again, you know, but if you like to putter and if you like to play around, then absolutely explore, explore the static site generators that are out there. There's this jamstack.com, I think is the link. They have a list of the many, many options that are out there. And, you know, you can just try a couple of them out just for your own random things. You can host them for free on Netlify. Even though I only have one site, I do have a couple iterations of that site on Netlify as I tried some of these different site generators like Astro, which is another Node.js based one. And you can share it or not share it. It's up to you. The barrier to entry is pretty low. When you were 20 something years ago, you had to go through some kind of a web provider that you paid a host that you paid money to. You don't have to do that today. Netlify can host for you. GitHub Pages can host for you. I like the self-hosted. I've done that too, but Comcast gets mad. Anyways, you can go through a host, but that you give money to, but you don't have to. You know, so just consider an experiment. And if it catches you, that's fantastic. Keep playing. I've been puttering at this for 20-ish years, and I will hope to be basically. As long as I can keep typing, I'm going to keep puttering on my site. But if it doesn't catch you, that's okay. You know, there's no big shame. It's not your group, and that's totally okay.
Right. One of the things about having a project, like either a static site to write things down, or like you said, even a WordPress site. I had WordPress for a long time because I just wanted it right away, and I didn't want to think about it too much. I'm using Netlify not because it's I like it, Netlify, but they're not sponsoring this episode. But GitHub Pages, I tried to do it, and honestly, I tried like three times and couldn't get it to work. So I'm just, because Netlify was easier for me. For me, that worked.
Yeah.
The other thing I want to say is a lot of people they learn about a shiny new thing. They'll read a book on Go or on Python or something, and they don't do anything with it. So that stuff's it's just going to leave. And I was there for a long time. And the stuff that I learned and did something with it, even if it was just a simple toy project, and especially the things that I wrote about, I remember that stuff. It sinks in.
Yeah, absolutely.
I was poking around Random Geekery, and I also see that you draw. Is that true?
Yeah, drawing, knitting, you know, I have multiple hyper-focus, hyper-fixations.
Okay. I've never tried knitting. Way a long time ago, I tried needlepoint, but I just don't have the hands for it. Your drawing stuff's pretty cool. And you even have a Society 6 page.
I think it still exists, whether the link works or not. I need to re-implement that PyTest flow I was telling you about. On the front page of Random Geekery, I have my little profile thing. That's a indie web thing, which we can talk about more if you like, but there also should be links out to the store, to the two storefronts I actually kind of pay attention to. And it's not big things. So it's just, you know, shirts, mugs, etc., of some of the cuter drawings that I've done and some of my image symmetry work. And, you know, so it kind of puts a little line to the for no, you know, no profit whatsoever. Although no, there actually has been no profit whatsoever. I think the Designed by Humans store has bought me 3 pizzas in the last 3 years. And I actually got a couple of pizzas off of the other one.
Threadless.
No, for Threadless. Yeah. They got pretty good workout. And I get 14 cents a month off of Libra Pay. I'm sponsored.
Nice. Yeah. It reminds me of when I had the WordPress site, I'm like, I'm getting some decent traffic. I'm going to put ads up. Mm-hmm. And I would get like checks for $1.23 and stuff like that. And I'm like, this is not worth it. I'm not doing this anymore. So
that was the beginning of the Google honeymoon for me was, you know, I tried the Google ads, way back and again, low, but not zero traffic. And it took about 2.5 years to get a check, and it was $100. That was a nice check. But I was thinking about like how often that slowed down loading my simple static page, you know, getting the ad. I was just like, this is absolutely not worth it.
Yeah.
Cool. So away went the Google ads, and eventually away went the Google Analytics, and it was just,
So, I guess, thanks for talking to me about your side project.
Sure. I do have one last thought to mention specifically on the static site generator as a learning tool. My coworker and friend John Anderson did a talk a few years back. He might bring it again. But the idea is learn a new language by writing a static site generator in it. And there's a link. I think in the notes that I sent you, I should have a link to the slides for that. And it's not the talk itself, which I have not yet found, but the slides themselves, they get you the gist, and it does a great idea of explaining what a static site generator is, and then some things, you know, the things you could do to go again from that some plain text that's not a website to a website. And I reference that, I go back and reference that slide set pretty frequently, actually. Because the final form for the person who uses a static site generator to build their website, the final form of that is to implement your own static site generator. So I know it's inevitable. I've done it once. It's going to happen again. You know.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I remember when I thought, how hard can it be to write your own test framework. So I wrote something kind of, you know, something along the lines of unit test or PyTest, because I'm like, it's just introspection. I can look at files and find the tests and then run those and say whether it passed or failed. And sure enough, the very simple bare bones implementation is not too hard. A couple of days, you can get that done. But it's all of the features that you want later, you're like, well, wouldn't it be cool if it did this also? And it blows up. Yeah. And it was not very many months before I thought, I don't want to support this anymore. I'd rather use an off the shelf thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
But also, I mean, that attempt also makes you more humble in your complaints towards other tools. So trying to do it yourself, you might go, why is this so complicated in Hugo or in Jekyll? Mm-hmm. But it's probably the best they could come up with for the API that they needed or had, or the information they have, without making it worse. So it can always be better, but these are open source things. So if you want to make it better, make it better.
You absolutely can. Yeah. And remember that, you know, that every one of these tools it bears the mark of their creator. You know, they're the very clear philosophical differences between each of these tools, and, you know, which you wouldn't expect for like turning my markdown into HTML, but there's, you know, with Go, with Hugo, with Zola, which is in Rust, with 11D, Gatsby, there's all these really significantly different ways to say the exact same thing. It's fun. And trying it yourself does teach you, or can, depending on how receptive you are to it, it can teach you some context and possibly some humility. So I started with plenty of that, so I didn't really need any more, I think. But
we've got a whole bunch of links here. We talked about a whole bunch of things. I'll probably forget some, but we'll put a bunch of these in the show notes and it'll be great. So thanks a lot. And we'll talk to you later.
Thank you. Likewise. It was great. Thank you very much.
Thank you for listening to Test and Code. Let's keep in touch. Head over to pythontest.com/contact to reach out to me, or /newsletter so that I can reach you, or /support if you'd like to, get a course or something. That's all for now. Now go out and test something.